Lee, welcome back to the show, my man. How you doing?
Jason, good to talk to you. Yeah, hey, listen, that Groundhog Day, I thought that was only for this side of the border crossing. I didn't realize that that impacted Canada, too.
Yeah, they had a Canadian guy out there today, yeah. So, yeah, they all look at it. Who knows? I have no idea if it's ever accurate. Like, the meteorologist got the best job going, man. They never have to be accurate. I love it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so, because, yeah, like, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, and Balzac Billy didn't, whatever that means.
Well, it doesn't really matter because in the middle of the winter, the sun doesn't come up in Edmonton until, what, 8:45, and it sets at 2:45 in the afternoon?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's pretty – yeah, but we get the sun all the time. That's the advantage. We get the sun all the time. It's great. Hey, Lee, now this it's a very unique Super Bowl this year because, you know, you've got one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, clearly at the end of his career. A lot of people speculating he's going to retire, win or lose, after the game. And then Cam Newton, who's just coming into his own, and is he is the MVP this year in the NFL. I don't think there's any doubt, and could finish off a dominating season. I'm not sure if you can – teach guys to be Cam Newton because he's just got so much raw athleticism. But do you think this is a little bit of a change in the guard that you're going to get into a more athletic quarterback moving forward?
Well, you got old guard versus new breed, you know, and I think that's a correct assessment that this is a special type of quarterback. But, you know, for every Cam Newton, there's an RG3. For every Cam Newton, there's a Johnny Manziel. For every Cam Newton, there's a Jamarcus Russell. For every Cam Newton is a Geno Smith who's failed. So this is the exception to the rule of an unbelievable gifted quarterback, great athlete, tremendously intense in terms of being a student of the game, fiery emotional leader on top of everything else. So I think he really is the exception to the rule. And you have to understand that in our game, this side of the border crossing, the NFL, you get quarterbacks who scramble, they're going to get hurt. They're going to get killed. They won't be the same guy after the fact. These guys are few and far between. Now, he is different. There's no doubt about that in terms of size and athleticism, et cetera. And he's kind of turned the league on its ear with what he's become the last year and a half. They put a pretty good team around him, pretty good offensive line around him. I think going forward, what we'll see is Cam Newton won't be running as much, but the threat to run will still make him a very dangerous quarterback. If you think back in the day, what made John Elway great when he first came out? He did run the football. I mean, he scrambled, he moved the pocket, he went down the field throwing, he went down the field running. Well, halfway through his career, he stopped running, but the threat of him breaking containment just scared the daylights out of defensive coordinators. I think a couple of years from now, that's what we're going to see Cam Newton become, because you don't want to get your guy exposed to taking hellacious hits and quarterbacks out of the pocket. That always happens to him. But in this day and age right now, Sunday, that is some superb physical specimen. It's going to go against one of the old guard great quarterbacks of all time in Peyton Manning.
Speaking of Peyton Manning, Lee, you look at the storylines for him, and, you know, he manages the game now. You know, they got much more of a run offense rather than a pass offense. And then there's still the HGH storylines that are floating around. And do you think the NFL will approach it different after, you know, when Tom Brady came out and said, hey, I didn't do anything, and, you know, they had this massive investigation and, you know, drug his name through the mud and then realized, well, geez, I guess there wasn't anything wrong at the end of it. Do you think they will approach this different with Peyton Manning?
Well, they're going to look at it, I think, effective next week. Peyton is going to go to New York for a face-to-face meeting, but Peyton late last night, and I don't know if the story's gotten north of the border yet, late last night, he confirmed to Denver writers that he will allow the Geyer Institute to release his medical records to the NFL League Office investigative team, NFL Security. That doesn't happen very often. So that leads me to believe that when Peyton utters the words, this is all garbage, he's pretty honest and pretty blunt and pretty truthful about it. Now, the insinuations are the stuff was mailed to his wife. Well, maybe Ashley Manning has illness issues. Maybe HGH helped her recover from some type of surgery. Maybe indeed, you know, there it is paperwork that says stuff was sent to Ashley Manning, but there's HGH testing in the NFL. Peyton Manning has never failed an NFL drug test, and now he's making available all of his personal records. Now, I don't know if he'll make his wife's personal records available from the Geyer Institute. Only time will tell there. So I don't think this is much of a story. I think it's kind of gone away only because of what he said late last night. I was pretty impressed with him to do what he did.
Well, you know what? If you got nothing to hide, then what's the problem, right? So I don't see an issue with it whatsoever. Lee Haxel Hamilton joins us, a veteran reporter in San Diego. Lots of NFL talk. Two interesting storylines today. One, of course, is kind of the rebirth of the Orange Crush defense on Denver. Their defense has been spectacular all season long. How do you think they try to contain Cam Newton? Because if you try to blitz him too much, he'll just step up out of the pocket and run.
Well, Wade Phillips is a madman. Wade Phillips is probably the second coming of Bill Belichick. Wade Phillips will do something really creative to slow the thought process down of Cam Newton. You know, my favorite phrase, if you were lining up against Belichick and you come to the line of scrimmage and you go through all your pre-snap reads as a quarterback, my favorite phrase is, do you believe what you see? Because what you see when you make your pre-snap read may not be there when the ball is actually snapped. You know, for example, last week, Denver lined up Von Miller at nose tackle. At nose tackle in a stand-up position. Think about that. They had him all over the field. They moved DeMarcus Ware inside to a defensive tackle position at times, which just absolutely screwed up all the blocking assignments. And, of course, Denver went wild in terms of just nailing Tom Brady. He didn't know where it was coming from because it was coming from different angles and different directions on every different snap. So I think Cam Newton's going to face a tremendous challenge at the line of scrimmage with his pre-snap reads. They are so quick off the ball, those two edge guys, and then they send guys from the secondary on zero blitzes. Cam's going to have some issues. Now, I think that the real game plan for Denver is to make it a pocket passing game. Make him stay in there. Do not let him get out to the edge. You know, make him throw with people at his feet. Make him throw with people in his face and see if his accuracy goes away, and try to prevent him from doing rollouts and obviously try to put a lid on runs. He's going to get some. There's no doubt about that. Here's an interesting stat for you, because I'm writing a big column about this for the end of the week on my website. In postseason play, the Denver Broncos defense has held opponents to 4 of 27 on third downs. That's 15% conversion rate, 15%. So, I mean, if they force Cam Newton into third and longs, look at the success ratio that Wade Phillips has had creating havoc for opposing quarterbacks. It won't be easy, but, boy, he's got the team speed. He's got the people, I think, to do it. There'll be some other great matchups. Can T.J. Ward, their safety, who's really banged up. In fact, both their safeties are banged up. Can they put a lid on Carolina's tight end? I think that's going to be an enormous challenge. But I just don't know that Cam has enough game-making teammates around him. He creates everything, causes everything to happen. I think he's going to have a tough time because Denver's defense, that Orange Crusher, is really special.
Lee Haxel Hamilton joins us. Lee, the report on concussions from the NFL, you know, it just came out. How do you think that, you know, I know that the concussion numbers are up, but it's also players are reporting concussions more. So how do we balance it? Are players saying, hey, I got to take care of myself now. I want to say I have a concussion and have them treat me correctly rather than be worried about losing my job, which I think at times used to be the factor in the past.
Well, I think Jason, you and I are really on the same page here. You know, around the country, they're running and screaming the game is out of control. It's even worse now than it's been. We had, I think it was 279 concussions during the regular season. Now, that's a significant amount. That's about 16% of the players suffered concussions. But I think what's a little bit different is the diagnostics on the sidelines with the independent neurosurgeons have allowed us to get a better read on concussions as they occur than what was practiced 3 years ago, 5 years ago, or 10 years ago. So the actual number of players hurt may be not as high as the fact that they're pulling guys off because their medical tests indicate there may be a problem. So I don't know if the 279 figure means we have an epidemic of concussions, or is the 279 figure, I think you and I subscribe to this, the 279 figure is the end result of better observation, better methodology to look at these players. Now, you know, I'm based here in San Diego. I was a longtime voice of the Chargers. I have never seen what I saw this year. They had 17 major concussions on their team, including all but one of their offensive linemen. And their guys were staggering off the field and were not getting back on the field for weeks upon weeks. So I think the vigilance of the NFL and the independent neurosurgeons is probably why, Jason, that number is up a little bit.
And speaking of San Diego, so they're staying for a year. What's happening with the Chargers? Like, is anybody even going to go to the games now? Is this dead franchise walking? Are they going for sure to L.A.? Or what's happening?
Well, this whole story changed. It was like mood swings in an insane asylum here at the end of last week. On Thursday night, the story came out. Chargers had made a deal to buy 5 acres of land in Santa Ana up in Orange County to build a practice facility. That would mean they're probably going to L.A. Early Friday morning, the NFL confirmed the Chargers reached a tenant agreement to be the second team in L.A. Late Friday afternoon, the Charger owner out of nowhere announced, I have this deal in my pocket to go to L.A. I'm going to now open negotiations with San Diego and see if there's a way we can get a new stadium built here. Quote, my priority is to stay in San Diego. This after a year of anger and a year of aggravation in which the Chargers badmouthed the civic leaders down here for how they put together a $1.1 billion financing plan for a new stadium. So they're going to meet at the end of this week, a first set of negotiating sessions, the Chargers in the city and county, to see if they can find a way to get a stadium built here. Are they going to L.A.? Well, they got the paperwork in their pocket that says they could go to L.A. I think in the next 2 months, they're going to really have to make a decision. In the next 2 months, I think, they're either going to have to say, we're here and let's turn the shovel of the dirt. We have the financing done. I want to stay in San Diego. Or they're going to announce, we're going to L.A., we can't do a deal, and they will then become a lame duck franchise. The people here are so upset at ownership, it's unbelievable. And if they can't get this deal done, and I don't know where it stands right now because it's so complex financially, so complex with land acquisition, so complex with where we should build the stadium on the Mission Valley site, where the current stadium is, or downtown, which is toxic land and land acquisition, et cetera. I don't know how they're going to sort this out if the Chargers maintain we want to go downtown. The Mission Valley site, the Qualcomm site, is really the best one. But we'll see where this goes. But the temperature of this thing changed so drastically in such a short period of time last week. It was absolutely stunning.
I know. Well, from afar, I was kind of like, am I missing something? So it almost seems like they didn't necessarily have a real plan in place. Lee, you've covered this for a long, long time. What do you think ultimately is going to happen?
Well, right now, I think the owner of the Chargers is of the opinion he's got the leverage because he's got this paperwork in his pocket. I was with the mayor Thursday night. I was with the head of the County Board of Supervisors. They're the two most important players on the other street corner who come up with the money. They told me there's not going to be any leverage. There's not going to be any changes in the money amount that we're putting on the table. There's not going to be a bypass of a public vote. This is going to a vote because we promised the voters it would. And by the way, going downtown makes no sense. So I think Dean Spanos is in for a real shock if he's coming to the table Thursday or Friday and thinking, I got leverage, because I think the city and county have leverage. And Jason, why? Because in their pocket is the reality they can go get the Oakland Raiders Saturday morning if they can't get a deal done with the Chargers, because Oakland is on a street corner destitute with no ability to build anything in the city of Oakland or in Alameda County. And this town emotionally would be willing, I think, to take on Raider football. That sounds sacrilegious to say that in San Diego, because there's such a history of hatred here. But there's so much hatred right now of the Charger owner. I mean, you guys can identify with hatred of past Edmonton Oiler ownership, I'm sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think the city and county are the ones who got the leverage, not the owner of the Chargers.
Wow, the San Diego Raiders?
I'll give you a 30-second story here. I don't mean to go long with you on this. I was on a plane flight coming back from Charlotte about a month and a half ago, and I'm going down the aisle to find my seat, and in aisle 23 is the mayor, Kevin Faulkner. And he grabbed me by the shirt. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, I came here for business. And I said, hey, when this thing takes off, let's go to the back of the plane and talk. I get along really well with him. And so I sat down in aisle 28, and then we came back and we sat and talked. And he wouldn't tell me anything on the record. I said, give me some background off the record. And at the end of the day, he asked me, do you think San Diego fans would like the Raiders? And I said, Kevin, you need to get a franchise here. Franchise is like an industry. If you have a chance to move an industry into your town, do it. You surely don't want to lose an industry. And I said, go get it. Why? because it's important New York City have an NFL team. On top of that, this is no longer the Raiders of Al Davis, which was you know, a bunch of hoodlums and thugs, etc. I said, this is a new owner. This is a roster with the arrow pointed up in terms of talent. And by the way, Raider fan travels. He'll come from Oakland to San Diego. He'll come from L.A. to San Diego. And by the way, there's a lot of Raider fans in San Diego County. I said, you'll fill that stadium. And I do think Charger fan, he'll come around to see these games. So I would, you know, by Wednesday of last week, I was emotionally prepared to say goodbye, San Diego. Hello, Raiders. And I told the mayor, you don't even have to call them the San Diego Raiders. Just call them the Raiders. The Raiders have a true West Coast brand. So we'll see where this thing goes. This story has not played out. I have such stadium fatigue talking about this. I swear to you guys, I think I've been on every talk show in North America in the last 6 months talking about what is, what might happen, what did not happen, and why.
One last one for you, Leah. Who are you taking in Super Bowl 50?
Well, I like Peyton Manning a great deal. I don't think he's got enough bullets in the gun. I think, as you know, it sounds stupid to be critical of the Broncos because they are still playing. I just think that Gary Kubiak has made their offense pedestrian. They're not going to be able to run the football worth a bleep against Carolina's defensive front. And Manning is not the same quarterback. That being said, Cam's got skill, but Cam's got guys wearing orange are going to be in his face. I'm going to pick Carolina. I bet there's going to be a pile of turnovers in this game. But, it's such a great storyline, old guard versus new breed. It will be fun.
Definitely will be fun one to watch, Lee. Always great to talk to you. We appreciate it.
Hey, enjoy the Connor McDavid comeback. Jason, let's do this again. My pleasure.